Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Hello, you're listening to the podcast, So There I Was. This is episode number 105, halfway around the world in 40 days.
Oh, man. With sweaty palms and no autopilot at 300 feet and ice clouds and whales and volcanoes.
I know. Dogs and cats living together, volcanoes, hot magma, seals jumping off of icebergs, dodging container ships. Holy
and of course,
shit.
Of course, a Karen.
Oh, yeah. And then there's Karen.
And Karen showed up because she parked her plane in the wrong place.
What makes this, you know, we're introing this, and it's like, oh, this is going to be great. Well, what we're not telling you is she was born in East Germany when the wall was still up.
Right.
The wall came down when she was, I think she said, 14.
Right.
And she was a professional equestrian, right?
Right.
And then got a ride in an airplane like 6 years ago.
And went, that's it, I'm done with horses.
Dude, done with horses. She can't get in the air fast enough. And her story is just incredible. And the shit she did, I mean, just, you know, like we've talked before, with our ferry guy that ferried single-engine airplanes all over the world, my palms were sweating when she was talking about some of this stuff.
Oh, the things she's done in an airplane you and I would never dream of doing.
No. It's freaking crazy.
Oh, yeah. So, and part of that, being born in East Germany, she grew up speaking Russian and German until 4 years ago. She never spoke a word of English.
Yeah, had to learn English because...
And she decided, well, if I want to travel outside Germany in my airplane where I can speak German on the radio to the local controllers, I can't do that everywhere else. I've got to get English proficient. So she did that, failed the first test, and went back and reattacked it. Speaks better English than we speak German, I guarantee that.
Every day of the week. And for our non-aviator listeners... English is the international language of aviation all over the world.
Right.
So that's why it was so important for her to learn it, so she could travel and fly her plane.
Right. Yeah. And she's not only done the Atlantic Ocean twice and is going to do the Atlantic Ocean again this summer twice. She's flown to Israel and Egypt and all over, man. She got that little air, bought the airplane and then learned to fly.
Yeah. Talk about motivated. She bought that plane, and now I'm learning to fly now.
Right.
And she
no
said,
excuses now.
What was her comment? I was more.
Oh, the more freedom. Concerned. Freedom is so important to me. It's more important than my personal safety. So once she got a taste of freedom.
Yeah, like, buddy. I say we get out of the way and let it roll.
Let's do it.
I'm missing something, buddy.
This here is a true story.
Get a towel for your palms
in the pond.
And stand by
at night,
because here comes KK.
In the world's smallest cockpit.
Don't sit on the oxygen hose. You'll understand why.
Through the weather of this. Oh, and to the tanker crew did that.
Don't do it.
Thanks a lot. We really appreciated that. I'm just kidding. No, I'm not. There I was, crossing the pond, and you could see that I wasn't exactly fun.
So there I was. I flew in my little Grumman over the ocean and 300 feet, and I saw something what instrument pilots never see. I saw whales.
Oh! That is how you start a So There I Was story. Welcome, everyone. This is Fig. I am in Ellijay, Georgia. In the Blue Ridge Mountains. Where is my cohort repeat?
Well, I'm home for one more day, then I'm headed to the West Coast. So repeat here. And it's my pleasure to bring to us this week, KK. I first heard about KK a few months back. I have a little Grumman Tiger and we have an email group. And out in that email group was, hey, there's this gal that has written a book that you all might be interested in. And it's called Halfway Around the World in 40 Days. And it talks about her wanting to fly, learning to fly, getting an airplane, and then flying a single engine, 4-seat Grumman Traveler. from Cologne, Germany to California and back. Oh my God. And all the adventures that go along with it. I don't know whether you're crazy, amazing, or both, but KK, welcome to the show. We are thrilled to have you join us to talk about this. Yeah.
I can't wait to hear this.
Thank you for your inviting me.
No, this is great. So let's go way, way, way back to the beginning. You were born in East Germany?
That's right. Yeah, the Russian side of Germany. I grew up until I was 14, and then the wall was falling. And then, yeah, and then I come out of my huge prison, but it was what it was. And now freedom is for me more important than safety.
Well, there you go. I mean, that sums it up. Okay, that's all we need to know.
Yeah.
So at what point did you go, I want to fly airplanes? Did you decide when you were a little girl you wanted to do that? Or did it come sometime later? How did that come about?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Until 6 years ago, horses was the one and only in my life. I never look up in the sky. I never had something to do with planes or something. And 5 years ago, a friend, she presented me for birthday a sightseeing fly. Was my first experience with little planes. I never know that they are existed. And so wow. I go in and the pilot start the engine and immediately I got butterflies in my stomach, this powerful takeoff. It was amazing. In this moment when when I lose the bonding to the earth, that was wow. I was infected. I don't know. You know what
both.
I mean? I was. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was it. You were hooked.
During this flight, I told the pilot, I want to be also a pilot. I have to be a pilot and make my passenger happy. Then you make me happy.
That's awesome.
That's awesome, man. Yeah,
6 months really later, is. 6 months later, I had my license. Before I bought a plane. During the training, I figure out that chartering is nothing for me. I need the flexibility with my kids and all this. So I want to have an own plane. So first I have the plane and then I had my license.
Okay.
So you bought the plane first and then you got your
pilot.
Did all your pilot training. That was motivation, right?
Right? Yeah. I mean, you can't,
got a plane.
Can't quit now.
You got to learn how to fly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how long did that take? How long did it take from the time you took your discovery flight or your first flight? How long was it before you had your license, your pilot?
Almost 6 months. Yeah. The night before I baked pancakes and the next day I want to be a pilot. So that was. We had in Germany a little trouble with... Before we can start with the training, we have security back check and background check and medical. That's the same like you have, and we have to do license for the radio in German. But for me, it was so important to make the English radio license. I know I want to fly around. In other countries, Germany is not, it's not half so big than Texas. So Germany is little. So I want to fly in other countries. So I need this English. But in this moment, I never use English in my life. I never speak an English word. Gosh. So I make an English course and the first exam, I miss. So I have to come back and try it again. So I tried harder with another course. And then by the second try, I got my English radio license. So that's my
This is phenomenal to me. I
was high motivated.
Yeah, I was good. That's motivation. That's what that is.
Yeah, I can't imagine having to learn Russian or German in order to go learn to fly an airplane and then getting all that done as quickly as that. I can understand the motivation to want to do it.
Yeah.
But she got her, you know, she got a rating in 6 months.
Right.
Which means English as well, right?
Yeah. First, of course, the phraseologie, it's very simple. That is 1,000 words. I don't know. So you can learn it. And then I start to, with baby talk with other people. And when I bought my plane, the Grumman, that is not like 44,000 Cessnas, it's only 3,000 Grummans on the world. So this is like a family, and I connected with these guys all over the world. So I want to talk with them. And this English, this new language, was for me a door opener. So I can talk with all over the world with the people. And that is also the best in traveling by plane. When you travel the world, you come with so many peoples in contact and you learn new friends. That is great. And English is the connection language, of course.
Wow. That's, I'm stunned at how quickly you did that and the motivation to get it. I mean, I get the motivation, but the obstacles, the hurdles that you had to do. The other thing I wanted to ask is, how did you go about it? Did you go to a flight school? Did you find a private instructor? Who is it that you got most of your training from? And then what is that process like in Germany? Most of us know what it's like in the States. You go to a flight school and then you go to a designated examiner or FAA examiner. What's that process like in Germany?
Yes, the same, but we follow the EASA rules, not the FAA rules.
Okay.
With my plane in maintenance, it's an American plane, so I have to follow both FAA rules for the American fabrication and the EASA rules because it's a German requested plane. So, and but teaching for the private license is the same. You go to a flight school and then, yeah, you have different teachers and you start with your 100 lessons in theory and your, how many is this, 45 hours in practice. It's the same.
Okay.
But we start with VFR flying. It's not included the IFR. This is separate.
Right.
I only make the VFR flying.
Right. And same as in the States. And you still are not instrument rated, correct?
No, I don't have. Yeah. This. My plane doesn't have instruments, so why I need a rating?
There you go. I mean, naturally. No, this, but you know, we're about to get into getting across the ocean.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
I know. Let's go there because my palms are starting to sweat just thinking about crossing the ocean in a single engine airplane and by the way, being VFR the whole time.
But I had my mobile. I have a compass and my map. So I plan this. I learn in the simulator before. I prepare for this trip 20 months. So I start when I did my license, the first travel was immediately to the North Cap. It's the northest point in Europe. And all the people say, oh, you can't fly this long way.
Uh-oh. Did we lose her?
We lost her. Oh, she's coming back.
Yeah. The people say, you can't do this. You are so fresh, your license. But that's why I make my license. Of course I did. And when I come back from the Nordkap, I know this is what I want. The long travels, what you only can by plane, not by car or by bus or by airline or something. So, and I heard from this Oshkosh, and every pilot has to be there one time in the life minimum. And the best is when you fly by yourself. So I say, oh, I do this. I will do this. But I start with flying when Corona plopped up in the world. So it was so horrible if you travel to other countries and every country has his own rules for immigration. In the COVID time, it was so crazy. And Europe is very small with a lot of countries, different countries. So every country had his own rule. But this was my start in aviation. I doesn't know other. So for me was normal that you have to prepare very well. You can't decide Friday that you start this journey Sunday. So there is a lot to do. So in 20 months, I prepare for this trip that I did 2022. I make more license, the night VFR license and survival trainings, but not only ditching in the water, there is much more. But ditching in the water, of course, I have to train. I was in a swimming hall. They prepare the darkness and the wave in the water, and you are in cancel and come down and 180 degrees around, and you learn which step you have to do first that you have a chance to, I tell you, never ever I drink so much water.
she just described the Dilbert Dunker,
right?
Yeah, so you were strapped in a seat, and they put you upside down, and you had to get out.
Yes, and the second module in this training was in a very cold lake. We learned how to go in a surviving boat, what you have in your plane when you cross the Atlantic. You have a boat in your plane, and how you can open this and how you can switch it when it's wrong. And when you never do this, then you doesn't know how it works. So I think after this training, I was much more prepared. Maybe I had 3% more survival chance, and I was willing to pay more for my emergency equipment. But I did also other trainings. It's possible you ditch on the ice cap and they doesn't found you for 2 days. So how is surviving on the ice? How you can make fire or fight a bear or something, you know? Not beer, a bear. Sorry.
Bear.
Sorry.
Bear.
I come from Germany. Yeah. We have beer in the mine. So then I...
I could survive on beer for a few days. I'm sure of it.
But what if you're being chased by the beer? The kind with the big chompers.
Yeah. Right? I did mental training, but so I learned kickboxing and something. It's only for your mental. But when the people ask me how I prepare mentally me for this trip, then I say, I'm a single mom with two boys. I'm enough prepared for mental. Sorry.
A grizzly bear's got nothing on two teenage boys in the house.
No.
And I did the radio license for IFR, the radio license. Okay. It means not the instrument rating, only the radio license, that I can understand when I come in regions, they are not used to VFR traffic. And maybe they give me commandos I doesn't understand. So that was important for me that I know what they want from me. So something like this. Mm.
Yeah. Wow.
And I bought a lot of survival stuff.
You certainly prepared more than I ever even dreamed. And, you know, we talked about it, and I knew some of what you had done, but the preparations that you went through for this, did you talk to anybody else who had flown across the ocean and get any ideas of equipment? Okay.
Yes. But the rules change every year, other rules. So, of course, they can give me a view on what could happen. But the most who I talk with was instrument pilots. So they fly in another world like me. They put all the route in her computer and the plane make all by himself. But okay. I do hand flying. I don't have an autopilot or something. I have nothing in this plane. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's crazy when you fly in 300 feet, and I mean 300 feet, not flight level 300 feet.
Right.
And you look behind because maybe there is something, and then you look for, oh my gosh, it's other than in 8,000. But I know, I knew before what I have to expect in this flight when I flew so low.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I check the vessel finder before so that I don't meet a ship. A ship can very big, but they are static, and so there was no.
But vessel was finder, crazy. Okay.
When I vessel finder is like a flight radar for ships.
Yeah.
Okay. And when I flew so low, I was in one point between Iceland and Greenland. I was surrounded by thousands of birds, maybe a million. Shit. I don't know. It was so beautiful. I was with my colleagues around me. All we fly. And later I heard these birds fly all over the year. They come only one time per year for on the island for birth, give birth.
Okay.
Lay eggs. Yeah. I don't know how you call it.
Yep.
Yes. Yep. And the rest in the year they live on the water. I was afraid that I can have a bird strike because they look very intelligent, not like the stupid pigeon in the city. You know, intelligent. Sorry. Yeah, that was amazing. And when I saw my first whale, I didn't recognize it was a whale. I think it was a big wave, looks different to the other waves. But then the second I figure out, yeah, it's true. It's a whale. And this, you can't imagine how impressive this view on this big muscle is when a mom with a baby whale swim. Oh, I was very fast with my 100 knots or something. And it was only few seconds every time when I saw whales, but in all this journey I saw a lot, and it's every single whale was so beautiful. It's so royal movement what they do in the water, you know what I mean? It's so I don't know.
Oh, incredible.
I can't imagine that. I mean, you had to be unreal to look down and see that so close, number one. And you know, you're out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. Were you between Greenland and Iceland at that point? Or do you remember where you were?
The first whale I saw between Faroe Island and Iceland. And Faroe Island, I have to say, was crazy. They have a notam with 27 pages only to turbulence.
Turbulence.
Yeah. Sometimes the airliner can't land there because it's too, the landscape make it so special. And I saw, I had a day with very less wind, only 5 or 6 knots. So I think that's nothing. That's 5 knots. What is it? Nothing.
Yeah.
But in this moment, I thought I got a structure damage. It's so unbelievable turbulent because of the Bernoulli effect. Wow. You know what is the Bernoulli effect?
Yes. Yeah.
And this is so crazy for my little plane. But it looks so beautiful. It looks like Jurassic Park was sink in the ocean. It looks so beautiful, but I would never want to go back there. Never.
Once is enough. Okay. Well, I want to back up and ask, why were you down at 300 feet watching the whales while you were crossing the ocean? Wouldn't you want to go high and relax a little bit?
It's different reason. One reason is there is around Iceland is a very huge airspace alpha. I'm not allowed to touch this. It starts from 5,500 and up. But the clouds were so deep. The clouds come up under 500 feet, the ceiling. So I had to stay below because in these clouds, over this cold ocean, there was ice, and I don't have de-icing, so of course it's a no-go for me. So
was the low altitude, was it hurting your fuel burn?
Yes.
Were you concerned about being able to make your next destination because of the fuel
burn?
Yeah,
of course. I had planned it, but I need almost all. I can't hold on my reserve. Gosh. But up, it would be more worse because there was headwind. So it was good to stay below.
Okay.
There was different reason. But okay. I calculate very well, and I see exactly where is my point of no return. So, but in this moment when the clouds was gone and the sky was clear, I was able to climb. There was no airspace. There was no cloud anymore. And there was Greenland in front of me. But in this moment, I saw my first iceberg in my life. And I stay below and I circle the iceberg. And I, what is the name when I, a seagull, not seagull, a seal?
Oh,
seal?
Yeah.
A seal.
The animal?
Seals?
Yeah. slipped from the ice.
Playing on the iceberg. Nice.
Oh, well, you probably startled them, you know, the noise of the airplane.
Yes, of course. I
wanted to get the hell off the iceberg.
Yes, I'm sorry I was too loud, but it was funny. And I make a lot of pictures and movies. This was unbelievable. Beautiful, beautiful. So blue water, white ice, and the stone, and the air was so clear and... Wow. But this airport, Kulusuk in East Greenland, was the first gravel runway. And every pilot who I talk with told me before, latest there, your wheel will be damaged. And this was the reason why I bring extra wheel with me. But there was in really good shape. And I make the softest landing ever, what I did make before.
Exactly.
But was in a really, really good shape.
Exactly. Okay. And our producer Bago is asking, did you have any modifications to the airplane to make this journey?
Modifications?
Did you do anything special to the airplane to make the trip?
No. I bring all my surviving. I have to say, yes, before I bought a G5, it is a 6-pack in one. Mm-hmm. The 6-pack. In one instrument, you know,
all the instruments in one, right?
Yep.
This was a last minute maintenance what I did, because I had to go to the embassy, the American embassy, for my visum, and they asked me that I have to show for every single day what I plan to stay in America, $266 on my bank account. So I know this and prepare in this 20 months, every month save money for this interview. And then I show them and all was fine. But a few days later, I flew through very good weather, I circled the cathedral in Cologne, and my gyro is dead. The first, I never was before. So I was shocked and I put all my money from the bank account. And this was for my...
to get the 6...
And buy this G5. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So Garmin, yes. I start my journey without money. That was crazy. But I start my journey because I plan so long.
Right, okay, can't stop now.
I have to ask.
No. Yeah.
That's a pretty good... That's pretty good picture.
Yeah, but only the above... Not the under.
The top one.
Yeah, right. the top one.
Just the top one.
Yeah, so for those just listening, Bago put up a photo of the G5 instrument. It's basically an attitude indicator. Blue above, brown below.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have two quick questions, KK. You did no modifications to the fuel system? No extra fuel tank?
I bought a lot of canisters, and I plan to land on strips without fuel station, that I can put the canisters in the wing.
Okay, so you brought fuel to
because
fuel yourself
I want
in
to,
the event.
Yes, I have the very old traveler, and the early traveler, they don't have the baggage door, and without the baggage door, they are 5 centimeters too short for the STC, for the auxiliary tank. So, and I asked the inspector in Germany, and he said, I have to pay €10,000 for the paperwork for the form 337, and that's way too much for me. So I can't do this. So I need every single airfield on this route. But over the ocean, I had not the longest route in my journey. This was overland in Texas, from Texas to Phoenix. This was my longest leg. But there was no dangerous, because every 10 minutes you have an airfield.
Sure. Okay, I have to ask, you know, I wrote this down real quick. Let's go back. Before you took your first flight, you said you were all about horses.
Yes.
What did you do besides ride horses? What did you do? You were raising two boys. What was your career or your job?
Before I had the kids, I was show jumper. So I jump over fences with my horse. So the fences were so high, I can't I can't jump without a horse. But in Germany, you don't earn so much money than in America. I was on a show in America that was amazing, and they got so much money, the winner. That's crazy. Oh, God. I would love to. When we win a race, then it's $100 or something. That's nothing. But it's so fun. I had a truck and I sleep in the truck with the horses and was every weekend on the competitions and all in Bavaria and was great. And before, when I start with flying, I had one last horse and I immediately sold the horse. In a good hand, it's all fine. But I wish I had more horses to sail that I can have more buy in aviation.
Well, so you were...
But now you've got 120 horses under the hood in your Grumman Traveler, right? So
that's right.
150.
So
that's right.
Help me repeat. Grumman Traveler is a little bigger than the Tiger. Is it a little bigger?
It's about the same. It's got the Tiger has a 180 horse engine in it. The Traveler's, like she said, is 150, but it's the same airframe. It's four horse. Seat.
Okay.
Yeah. Four seat, fixed gear, fixed pitch prop, 120, 130 knots. True. In fact, Chase has a picture of her airplane up now.
Yeah, hey, there it is.
And you can see the Pegasus is her name. It should say that it's between the horse and flying.
Pegasus.
Yeah, Pegasus.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Flying horses. Yeah.
So that's pretty awesome.
And we'll get that picture up on the in the show as well. Wow. Yeah. What was the longest leg you had over water during the flight? Do you know?
Yeah, 480 nautical miles, I think. Oh, no, the longest, the longest would be Goose Bay to Narsarsuaq, but it was too long for me. So I fill up my canisters very full, and I flew to the coastline 1 hour, and there was airfield closed, but there was an airfield. Okay. It was closed 5 years ago. And I flew very low over the low approach and checked the runway, the surface, that there is no wild animals or maybe a wood or tree or a hole or something. Mm-hmm. But when I decided, okay, it's fine, then I landed and was also a gravel runway, but very not in good shape. Mm-hmm. And so I fill up my canister there that the tanks is full, the wings are full. And then I start like I learned to start on a gravel runway slowly and then come faster and faster and faster and then full. But I demolished my plane in this takeoff. But I doesn't know it in this moment. I saw it later, only a few days later by the next pre-flight check. I demolished my stabilizer because there was a scarf stone. Is this the right word? And he pushed stone in the stabilizer and there was a hole. But I think I was in Narsarsuaq and I survived the landing in Narsarsuaq. And I think in the war, the planes have much more holes and they fly. So I fly.
Oh, yeah.
I fly further, of course. I know I had this damage and I know I flew until there, so it works. So I was not scary about this. But I know
you're right.
I had to go into shop when I come back to Germany. I have to go into shop. Narsarsuaq is one of the 10 most dangerous airports in the world because there is no second chance. You can't do a go around. There is
one way in and one way out.
Yes, that was crazy because there was sea fog before the coastline was sea fog, and it could happen a chance that the sea fog goes into fjords and come to the airport, and then the airport has to close. Of course, I had land blind. That is dangerous by himself, but the most dangerous for my pocket money was when the airport is closed, you have to buy €2,000 because the airport is closed and it's outside from the operation time. But of course you pay €2,000 when you survive a blind landing in Narsarsuaq. But I was lucky enough and I had good visibility conditions.
Wow.
Yes.
It's
holy cow.
Well, yeah, one fee and fine after another, and all these challenges are just amazing to me.
The biggest challenge for my little plane, for me, was with my little plane, it's very underpowered. You know, for this traveler, it's not made for. But the name is Traveler, so it's made for, but not for this kind of traveling. And yeah, but I flew against the time. And this was an issue for me, because when you fly from west to east, you fly so hard against the time zone, and the operation time comes so much faster than in the other headings. Sure. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, well, yeah, it's later. It's later when you take off in the morning. It's already later to the east or earlier to the west. So, yeah. But the other thing is, you talked about survival and crossing the ocean. And I think you had a similar, was it a dry suit? What is it you were wearing for anti-exposure?
I hate this. This was a dry suit. Yeah.
Nobody likes wearing that thing.
Yeah, I can't use the Frankenstein, the orange thing, because my cockpit is too tiny. So I had a dry suit, what I had to wear from beginning, complete and closed. It was very tiny on my neck, and I got for hours and hours. I can't press good. That was crazy. That was, I hate this so much. And it's only dry. It's not warm. So I need undertaking clothing, overalls. Right. And so,
Not good. Not good at all. Nobody likes wearing that.
Yeah, but the Frankenstein, you can open the top, but I don't had room enough to and also in 300 feet you don't have time. You have to be ready for ditching immediately.
Right.
But I think the Traveler, the Grumman, is the best plane for ditching in the water. So you have more chance. You can open the cockpit before you ditch complete. It's a canopy. You can slide it. In a Piper, it's horrible, or in a Mooney, if you have a passenger by side and maybe he is
incapacitated.
You can't go out. Or a Cessna, the wings are on top, so the doors is underwater. You can't open it. It's, I think I have the best plane. Of course, I don't want to try it, but it gives me a little bit more comfortable.
Right.
That's amazing.
So what was your biggest surprise in your first journey over to North America, across the Atlantic? Did you have a surprise that you weren't prepared for?
Of course. I say to you, 150% preparation is 90% success. I think so. But there is so much what you learn new that is so, a deep learning curve is crazy. I got hypoxia over the ice cap that I never expect, because I flew much higher sometimes over the Alps. But I got this hypoxia because you are over the ice cap, and I did my oxygen not right installed. So, and you have only down the white and up the blue. And there's nothing else. And I thought all the time, I turn.
Okay.
Is this the right word? So I thought all the time I turn, but the magenta line shows me, no, you're right. But,
It
was, that
she
was crazy.
She thought she was in a turn.
Yeah. But that's
okay. Gotcha. Yeah. So you felt, vertigo feeling. Like you feel like you're turning, even though you're
where you
level.
Think you're okay. turning, but you're really going straight.
Yeah, and holy I lose shit. My route. I lose my right route, so I switched by side, and I saw, what is the name? When you see something what's not there, how you call this?
Well, it could be a mirage or an illusion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so, that's name of planes, huh? Mirage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mirage. Yeah, French Mirage.
I saw something. So, and I flew to this what I saw.
Yeah.
And this was the radar station over the ice cap from the Cold War. That was crazy.
Radar station over the ice cap. Station. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the reason why I come too late to the next airfield and I airport, and I can't go further to the next where I booked a hotel. So I stranded in Kangerluarsuk, and they was full booked. There was no room for sleeping for me. And God, I drive crazy. And I ask, can I sleep in my tents under the wing? No, it's forbidden. It's not allowed. Because of the wild animals. Okay, okay. Oh, you can buy there in the supermarket a gun, because nobody goes 50 yards from the village without a gun because of the bears and all this. Crazy. So better I don't sleep under the wing. But I was desperate. I was a very desperate housewife. Not housewife. Desperate. This was another moment. Sorry.
That's a TV show.
I was very... another TV show.
Desperate housewife.
I was desperate. Sorry. Only desperate.
Yeah, you were desperate.
Yes, desperate because of my sleeping situation. And at the end, around Four Corners, I found a kid's room where I can sleep by a private family there. That was amazing.
Wow. That's good.
Yeah. And there was a surprise in this village, Kangerluarsuk. They doesn't use keys. So all is open. It doesn't matter if it's a car or a house. They doesn't use keys because there is no enemy.
No crime.
No crime. Yeah.
No enemy. No crime. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
That's just good.
That's amazing. And can I make an assumption that wherever you were going, you arrived at during daylight hours? You arrived at daytime or
over the ocean
nightly?
Yeah, over the ocean. In this journey, yes. In other journeys, when I flew to Israel, I use the night because I know they have GPS jamming. And I know I wouldn't have the Magenta line on my mobile phone. So I use the night to find the lights on the coastline, and I find the city in Israel. So that was extra that I used the night. But over the ocean to America, I was only by daylight arriving.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. I have another question for you.
Of course.
This is from Bago. He's one of our producers. It's like a cultural, more of a cultural question than an aviation related question, but your first trip over to the United States, did anything surprise you about, you know, our way of life, or what, you know, when you got to the United States, how you were treated? Did anything surprise you, or were you prepared for that?
A lot surprised me, of course. All was new for me. All. Also in Canada, there was the Inuit. Inuit, is this the right?
Right.
The Eskimo people.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And Native. The flight, this was one of the dangerous flights in my life, was from West Greenland to North Canada, because I was covered from down and from upside in a ice cloudy, and they comes faster together than I calculated before. So this was one of the dangerous flight in my life. And there was one moment when I saw, this is the end.
Your plane was heavy with ice? Oh, shit.
Yeah. And the satellite phone doesn't work. And I know I have only one chance. The synthetic vision on my tablet shows me a fjord under me, but I can't see it. I see the ice clouds under me, but I dive in because it was my one chance to come safe. But there is other weather rules than we are used to it, because when you over the polar zone comes in ice, then it's not that it's melt when you come down, that sometimes the most it's more ice under you.
Yeah.
So, but I had to deep in this ice clouds, and I only look on my instruments and my G5 and this, and I saw the stone left to my left wing, maybe
some mountains,
few meter mountains. Yeah.
Yeah. Cumulo granite. Crazy.
Boy.
Yeah. And then I landed in Iqaluit, North Canada, by the Inuit people. And the Inuit people had a problem with drugs and alcohol, a lot. And this scary me more than the weather, because and I stay in the hotel room with my food, what I organized for me. This was new for me. But then it was a surprise. After days or after weeks, I saw on the flight to south of Canada my first trees, and this then I feel, oh yeah, I forget I missed the trees and now I have it back. So that was nice. And that when I came to America, it was a funny story. The immigration always is funny. The immigration in Canada was also funny because there is a rule. You are not allowed to leave your plane. When you landed, you have to stay in your plane until the federal officer come to you, a man in black, and want to see all this papers work. So, but I forget it after this dangerous flight. I forget it. And I was so happy that I survived this flight, and I jump out my plane and I hug the fuel guy and had a nice talk, and well, I close up the dry suit that I can press, and 5 minutes later the federal officer come to my plane. Oh, he was so pissed with me, oh my god. But I luckily I have this weapon that I am a woman, I think. So this was the moment when I can play this card. So And the immigrations in America was also very funny. I remember on the rule that I have to stay in my plane, and I did it, and I stay in my plane, but I can open the canopy and I stay in my plane up like the Liberty. Like the Liberty State.
Yeah, standing up.
Yeah, I make a selfie. Yes, I'm in the States. Super. I was so happy that I bring my plane after 50 years back to her homeland. And then the officer came and he showed me his empty hand. So, sorry, I'm a girl. And the first emotion what I had, I thought he want to help me out of the plane, and I jump and
I
jump in his arms, and this was so funny. But he was shocked. He only want my passport and not the whole pilot.
Not the whole girl.
God.
That's great.
Yeah.
Where did you clear customs in the US? Where did you land?
Bangor, Maine. Yeah.
Bangor,
Maine. But this was stressful for me because 5 minutes before the borderline, my transponder shut down and comes never back to life. So this was my ADSB and nobody can see me. And yeah, but I stay quiet. I never get in trouble in this time because the plane is flying. It's only the transponder issue. But it's, of course, I was a little bit stressed because I was afraid that they say, no, you don't have a transponder. You have to go back to Canada. But they let me in and they tell me exactly where I have to fly. 20 minutes in this heading, in this height, to this VOR and blah, blah, blah. And so they put all other traffic from my way, that there is no issue. So this was a little bit stressful for me, and I was very sad because this is the reason why I was not able to circle the Liberty over the Hudson River. I have to stay outside on the ocean abeam New York because I have no transponder and no ADSB in this moment, and it's not allowed to end Bravo.
Darn it.
Airspace, yeah. So let me jump in real quick and describe this. The transponder that she's talking about for the non-pilots is a radio that's in the airplane, and you're given a four-digit code, and you dial that code in, and that's what shows up on the radar of the air traffic controller. So they can see who you are, where you are, that sort of thing. And then the ADS-B she's talking about, it helps identify positions of other aircraft to other aircraft. So if you're flying along, you can see on your little scope that there's another airplane at 2 o'clock, 1,000 feet above you, below you, that sort of thing. And they do require that transponder to go into Class B airspace, which is high traffic density in New York, Boston, the major cities. So I relinquish. Sorry.
I have to say, you have to know that you are so free in America with flying. That is so easy to fly in America. I love it a lot. It's in Europe, or especially in Germany, we are so overregulated. You wouldn't imagine how stressful this is. And you, by in America, it's so easy. I love it so much. Yeah.
That's good. So you're very limited to where you can fly VFR and that sort of thing. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
So
every single airfield had operations time. And we have, for example, the air traffic controller in America never asked me where I came from. That's not from interest for him. And that makes sense to me. But in Germany, we are so a control nation, you know, and they're ask all these questions, how many souls on board and where do you come from and all this. But I was another funny story, with the air traffic controller, they can't repeat my call sign. They was total overloaded with my call sign. I talked to them, Delta Echo Echo Hotel Alpha, and they say always to me, November Delta what? And I said, no, Delta Echo Echo Hotel Alpha. It was always the same. And then I figure out, oh, the other pilots always say, for example, Skylane November blah blah blah, or Piper Apache November blah blah blah. So I try it and I say, Grumman Delta Echo Echo Hotel Alpha, and they say, Grumman November Delta what? It was horrible.
The Delta was throwing them off.
Yeah.
And then when I was at outside on the ocean at Beam New York, I saw a big ship, an orange ship like my orange plane. So I flew to this ship and I sink down and say hello and shake my wings like two F-18s a few days before in Canada did it to me. And I do it to them. But after one circle, I let him alone. Maybe he is afraid that I have an issue, so I don't want to give him this feeling. But then I saw that he has very big the name of the country on the side. And I remember this when the ATC called me the next time. And then I say, Germany, Delta Echo Echo Hotel Alpha. And from this moment after Germany, I have the attention. And then was nowhere an issue anymore.
There you
All
go.
Right. That's a great story.
Yeah.
So
like you said, Fig, Delta screwed them up. They're thinking Delta Airlines.
It was screwing them up. Yeah. No, it was the, yeah, it was the, they said, yeah, they were listening for November, you know, which is the, how all United States registered aircraft start with the N for November. And you were not saying that. It was not what they expected to hear. So it was screwing up their thought process.
Yes. Okay. But in Germany or in Europe, we have a lot November registered planes. So we have so many different countries here and all have different call sign to begin. But in America, I only have 5 letters. It's not so a big deal. Ah. Yeah. Ah.
So yeah. You kind of glossed over this, but I want to go back for a second. You said you got a couple Canadian F-18s come by and wave.
I have to say I was on the ground.
Okay.
Was on the ground, but this was so funny. But the fuel guy there say, oh, there was a long time not here. And maybe they know that I don't believe that they know that I was there, but I waved back and they come back a second time and this was crazy. Yeah. And this was the first time that I saw this. And then the next time when I saw F-18s was in Oshkosh. It was amazing. My first time in Oshkosh. Yeah.
That's outstanding. So that was that Oshkosh of 22?
2022, yes.
2022.
Yeah, I landed on the green dot.
There you go. Yeah. So explain what that means to people that have never been to Oshkosh, landing on the dot.
Yeah, what does that mean? Land on the green dot.
Oh, the green dot, not political, you mean, right. The green.
Yeah, landing on the green dot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I make the green dot, I became the green dot, and I touched down exactly there where they won. And then I open the canopy, and I have a huge German flag and hold outside, and I taxi so long, I think I taxi 45 minutes to my parking place, and I hold all the time my German flag, so I have the attention from a lot of people. That was amazing. And then they asked me for talking on the stage. That was crazy because of my muddle English, you know. And they asked me so many questions about my journey over the Atlantic. And I thought all the time, oh my God, I know what I saw, and I know I have to go back there. What do you with me here? It was crazy.
How many days was your journey from the time you left to the time you got to Oshkosh?
From time I left at home in Germany, yeah. I have to calculate, because I flew to New York, Alabama, Texas, Phoenix, Las Vegas, Reno, Sedona, Telluride, all this. And in Oshkosh, the people say, oh my gosh, you saw more from our country than
we did.
Right? Yeah. No. Okay. You got a great tour. Oh, there's a good picture of the dots right there.
Yes.
So you're expected to land on a dot based on your aircraft type at Oshkosh.
Yes. And this was so funny. All the people say, oh, it's so stressful, the arriving, but it was poor fun. I thought I made it very smart when I start early, but 100 people around me had the same idea. So we was a lot planes in the FISC arrive.
Right.
So there is a NOTAM. You study the NOTAM. It's a booklet, and it's very easy.
It is easy, but it's very specific. I think much like flying in Germany, you follow the rules, so the controllers won't just let you in and give you guidance. They expect you to know what you're doing when you arrive at Oshkosh. It's not something you just wander into.
I could never survive that.
No, right?
I'd never survive that. I'd be kicked out of the airspace. Go away, don't come back.
Yeah, I remember hearing a radio exchange one year from a guy who was trying to get in. He goes, I left the NOTAM back at my last takeoff point. The controller said, go back and get it. You're not coming in.
So, yeah, good luck with that, pal.
Yeah. Either do what you're supposed to do or get out.
Yeah, sometimes it's good that it's their rules.
Well, I mean, there's so many light airplanes going in and out of there that it would be a disaster and mid-airs galore if people weren't following that procedure. So it's there for safety.
In Oshkosh, it's definitely good that is this rule.
Right.
But I mean, when I landed in Faroe Island, for example, and I know they don't have AFGAS, so I prepare before with the fuel guy there that he transport me by truck to the next car fuel station. I'm able to tank super bleifrei, or how you call it, motor gas, you say it.
Yeah.
So it's not normal it's not easy to, you have to prepare this because you can't go on an airport with burning material. So this is all to organize before. I think I talk 100 times to different places and more than 100 emails writing before. And also I ask for supporting people me, but that is hard when you ask 100 times this question, can you support me? And always is 98 times is the answer, no, that's hard, but you have to stay strong and you believe further on yourself and in your plane. Also, 3 weeks ago, 3 weeks before my journey, this was finally that I got an insurance. I need another insurance than I fly in Europe, of course. And it's always arguments from them was always, it's an old plane, it's single engine, and you are alone solo flying. There's no safety pilot. And also, you are a woman. So this is always also an issue. It is.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And you are so fresh in aviation. It was only 2 years that I have my license. Yeah. But I did it. I fight for what I want.
I mean, this is.
How about that repeat?
It's amazing. I am shocked at doing this. It's something I've never done. I know you've never done it. We've gone across the ocean in jets, but you know, everything's laid out and planned, and there's all the training and safety and everything you go through is all there for you. And it wasn't on our shoulders to prepare every last detail to make sure that we got safely to our destination. And this, the level of planning and the perseverance is amazing.
I didn't even think about the insurance aspect of that.
I wouldn't have.
You, man.
I bet you.
No, I mean,
I bet you think a lot, not about also other stuff, what it needs for this kind of journey. Yeah.
I'm not sure I would even know where to start.
Right.
Planning this thing.
This was when I decided, when I come back from my first long trip from the North Cape, and I decided to do this trip to America. In this moment, it plopped up big fear. Can you imagine? Because I decided I want to do this. And in the same time, I have fear for myself. But I think when your dream makes not fear, then is your dream not big enough? You know what I mean?
Oh, there you go. So, you're and, not and dreaming this, big enough if you aren't afraid of what you're going to do.
Yeah, and this is the reason why I wrote this book, because in this time when I did this journey in the 6 weeks, 6.5 weeks, it was so fast and so many input in so short time. Every single airfield where I was, you feel a second week holiday, so, but in short time. So I had to write this book to bring all out of my inside out, that I can handle this, that I can handle for myself, this experience. And now when I have this book ready in English, the CIO from the EAA in AirVenture Oshkosh, he invited me to present my book, and I decided to come back by my plane again to bring my book to Oshkosh this year.
Wow. So
yeah. So she's going to do it again.
So when will you leave? When will you depart to make it to Oshkosh?
End of June.
Okay.
End of June. Yeah. The last time I had, do you know what it means, the get there it is?
Get there itis.
Yeah. Yep. So I had this all the time, because I had my kids in the kids camp during I did this journey. And I know on this day I have to be back to pick up my kids from the kids camp. So, so as this year I take me 1 week more for a shorter journey, that I have a little bit lesser stress.
Yeah, look,
but my biggest
cushion.
Yes. My biggest wish, of course, is to fly around the world one day. And you have to make step by step a little bit more experience to come to this level that you are ready. But I have to wait, because of the political situation at the moment in the world is too much. So you can't do this at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a sad state of affairs. But yeah, you're right.
I'm still just slack-jawed. I mean, I got, and I'll put some pictures in too. I first heard about it, as I said earlier, I first heard about KK in an email group, and I asked for her contact information, and the guy that had put it out, he says, well, I don't have that, find her on Facebook. And then a couple days later, he sent me her phone number, and I sent her an email and said, told her about the show and said, wait, we'd love to have you on to chat about some of this, because I'd read the summary of her book. And she's like, and I said, oh, and I'm getting ready to go from Hong Kong to Belgium. She's like, oh, well, too bad you don't have any time there, because, you know, I'm not far from there. I'm like, actually, I've got 4 days. So I got on a train, went over to Cologne, and we flew around Germany. I've got some great photos of the cathedral in Cologne and some other amazing stuff. I got to go flying with her in this traveler, and what a fun experience. And she's competent. She is confident. She's a fine aviator. I was impressed with everything I saw. This was an amazing experience for me, and I can't imagine doing it across the ocean.
No way.
I
am so impressed. Well, I'm so impressed, you know, number one, with your focus. And, you know, you, like you said, you had the motivation, and then, you know, the fact that you not only did you get your license and everything in 6 months, you bought the plane, which there was your you know, it's like you put the cart before the horse.
Right.
I don't know if you understand that or not, but I mean, holy cow. So now you got this plane. I gotta get my shit together and fly this plane. And then you decided I'm gonna fly it all the way across the Atlantic to the other side of the world. I mean, it's really impressive. Just the thought of doing what you did makes my palms sweat and makes me it's not comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, I'm used to, let's just say I'm not hanging it out like that anymore.
No.
That's something else.
Right? I mean, so many other wonderful stories in this book. I'm telling you, folks, it's well worth it. She's going to be in Oshkosh. If you can get there, go and grab a copy from her there, get it signed. But what I've read of it so far, it's 400 pages, so it's full of detail. Let me read just a little bit here real quick. It says, although faced with numerous dangers, genuine fear gripped me only once. Yet the thought of surrender never crossed my mind. During long, perilous flights over icy expanses, unexpected encounters with whales reassured me that my choices were right. My little red plane startled seals on ice floes, touched down on closed runways, approached erupting volcanoes, and soared over the residences of American ex-presidents. The physical and mental strain led to significant weight loss, but each challenge was met with unwavering determination. A timely intervention by a policeman rescued me from an awkward situation, and narrowly avoiding illegal parking charge for an airplane added to the adventure. So that was actually a good story I read in there. Let's talk about that illegal parking that you almost got with the, and literally her name was Karen.
That is true. Her name was really Karen. It comes so the night before it was very late and I miscalculate the wind. So I come much too late to an airfield. It calls Baikonur and there was close. I was able to land the airport on the opposite from the river, managed that I can land. The airfield was closed, so there was a fence around everywhere. And I saw the big, huge firefighter planes, the yellow, huge, I forget the number, 145, or I don't know what the number is of these planes. And I decided it's a very nice spot for me to parking this night next to these planes. And I make my tents under the wing because I can't go out of this airfield.
Yeah, you're locked in. You couldn't get through the buildings or out the gate.
Yeah, I misunderstand this because I always watched only to the planes and I didn't saw the little way in the other direction. There was, this would be the right way to the tower and I missed this way. So I didn't found it. So I was locked in and I decided to sleep under the wing. And in the middle of the night come the fuel guy with a truck, but on the trucks then jet fuel. This was also crazy. And he put me out of the airport in a hotel 20 minutes from the airport in this village. But the next morning I come back to my plane with the tents and this Karen from the fire station came with a big ticket. Oh my God. Yeah. You see this?
There's her tent under the wing of the plane. I'm holding it up for those watching the live stream.
Oh my God.
Yeah. You see the tiger?
Oh yeah. There's the big firefighting plane in the background there, right?
Yeah. And it's absolute forbidden to park there. And
oh, well.
I think she wants to see me in the jail. So I pack crap all my stuff and make the engine on. She had to go by side. And I move.
That's and what she's I talking about in the book. It's great the way she describes the story. She's like packing up her trash and she sees this woman rocking across the ramp at her. She's getting it all in the airplane and just trying to ignore her. And, you know, she's catching in her peripheral vision. And since she kind of looked up and saw her, she goes, she sparkled me with her eyes, which, you know, of course, you think of someone with a laser sparkling you.
Laser.
Went, oh, yeah.
She lasered her. Yeah.
My son called all this woman Karen.
Yeah. Karen. Yeah. Karen.
Oh, God. I hope she doesn't hear this podcast. Because I want
she's,
to.
She's
Karen,
to
if you're listening, we love you. Good thing you didn't write a ticket.
She wants to go back to. You're going to use that as a stop again.
I won't go back to this airfield because the fuel guy is a friend now for me. On my way, on my way back, he invited me to his family. This was so nice. This, I have to say, this was the best in my journey. Not only to save money to avoid the accommodation costs, I was I flew from friend to friend to friend to friend and was invited in them home. This is so unbelievable, heartwarming, overwhelming. How friendly and hostly friendly the people are to me. That was amazing. I have to say, and I have friends all over the world, and they are so happy when I come that they invited me in his house, and this is the private from them, and they let me in. That is so amazing for me to learn so much people behind the face, behind the facade, you know what I mean, to look. That is cool.
Well, now you know too, not to park in that same spot when you go back.
But where you know privacy was in Oshkosh. I had my tents. You saw my tents is made in Germany and was very strong. It's a very good tents. The wing is the roof of the tents. That is amazing. So in the first night, in Oshkosh, we had very thunderstorm, very, very thunderstorm. And a lot of tents around me goes flying, but my tents was so strong. I was so happy. But the privacy in Oshkosh was gone. I come some days, I come back to my tents and there was visit cards and love letters inside in my tent. Oh my God. Well, it's my sleeping room. That's crazy. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well,
yeah, that is Oshkosh.
That's Oshkosh. Yep. Wow. I don't know what to, I don't know what else to say. I'm stuck.
I can say one more story if you want.
Yes. Oh,
please do.
Yeah,
I have a lot. If you travel, you have a lot to tell. When I start in Narsarsuaq heading to Iceland, and during this flight, I was middle in the flight, the volcano erupted. A new volcano. And immediately, a NOTAM plopped up, of course, a NOTAM. All IFR traffic was grounded. So I was so happy that I am a VFR pilot and I can fly. Of course, VFR, we have visual rules and we don't fly in the black steam of a volcano, like not fly in a white cloud. So we have visual rules and we was not grounded. This was cool. But due to this weather, I was stranded for 2 days. So I decided the next day I have a day off in Iceland and I decided to ask a helicopter pilot for a sightseeing flight to the volcano. That was so cool. And I doesn't have to pay so much because they have 5 seats for passengers and mostly they come couples for a sightseeing flight. There was, there was 1 seat free. And of course, next to the pilot, that was so cool. And we was a woman pilot and we flew to the volcano. And I saw videos before in YouTube when a drone goes to the volcano and when the air is too hot, the drone fall down like a stone because the air can't lift up the aircraft. Yep. When the helicopter start a little bit to shake, it was exciting, but she did a great job and was unbelievable to see so close and you can feel the heat between you sit on the co-pilot seat and between there is a glass shield and you can feel the heat from the volcano. It's amazing.
You were too close. If you're feeling the heat,
you feel the
number
heat.
One,
you feel
number
the heat.
Two, you're in a helicopter. Right. Those are death traps.
You can feel the, yeah, that's amazing. I did so much pictures and videos. Yeah. But
did
also,
did you see when you were flying in the volcano? Did you see it visually, or do you just saw the NOTAM pop up?
No, the air traffic controller told me I had to change my route because on my route is the volcano. It's not possible anymore to fly there. I had to fly other. Yeah, that was stress, a little bit stress because of my fuel calculation.
Yeah.
Normally, over the Atlantic, you need more reserve than over the land. And yeah, at the end, I had not so much, but I had reserve, but not so much like the rules.
You plan for it. You got to. Yeah, that's another thing. You got to factor in volcanoes, Repeat.
Right?
Yeah. You got to factor in volcanoes when you're doing. What?
Never had to do that. Wow.
And it's not, it's not a crater. Was not a crater. It was like a snake, a long line, a crack. So it was a long line with lava.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was cool. You say lava or lava or lava?
Lava.
Lava?
Lava.
Okay.
Hot lava.
Yeah, exactly. Very hot.
Yeah. Holy cow. Wow. So impressive. And I am going to have to get your book because I want to read. I want to read about it.
Yeah, I have to.
Because
I
there's just so much you can't.
I can write so many books, but I don't have time for this. For example, last year, before the war started in Israel, I flew to Israel, and this was amazing. And after Israel, I flew to Africa, Egypt, and I circled the pyramids. It was amazing. I can write so many stories, but and I can tell, for example, what I can tell to you, I know you pay between $5 or $7 per gallon of gas. In Egypt, you pay almost $30 per gallon of gas.
Oh.
That you can see the difference. How easy it's flying in America.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We have not this high price in Europe, in Germany, but almost a half from Egypt we have. That's crazy expensive here.
Gosh.
So you are very free.
Yes.
That is, yeah, we're very fortunate. And I think you're $15 or $16 a gallon in Cologne.
Yeah, that was, equivalent. You remember? Yeah. And also we have to pay fees for everything. Landing
fees,
approaching
fees. Yes, every place we landed, she had to go upstairs, pay 15, 20 euros just for touching down.
Every time we have to pay. So. Oh, and don't touch an international airport. It could be a...
right.
You can be...
Bankrupt you.
Bankrupt you, yeah. Thank you for the word.
Good Lord.
So, well, we've been going almost an hour and a half here. I think it's time we get to land this airplane. Yeah, told you. See, you were nervous, but I can tell you've had fun. We've had an absolute ball, and we've gotten great comments. Styx is listening in the background. Normally, he participates in production, but he said, what a fantastic guest, and please thank her for coming on. And so we want to do that. Thank you. Thank you for spending your evening with us from Germany, afternoon here in the States. We are honored that you took the time to do that with us.
Yes. Thank you, KK.
Oh, I only want to say you're welcome. It was a pleasure for me.
Right. Well, we hope you'll come back with more stories because you've got another adventure here that you have to accomplish here over the next several weeks. But 2 months from now, you're heading our way again. So I'm thinking there might be another story or two at the end of this journey. So if you'll do that. We also want to thank all of those who served active duty, veterans, and their families who have sacrificed so much to make our country one that is such a blessing to be able to fly so freely in, and all the other freedoms that we have. So thank you to all of them.
I know straight out of the gate, we also owe a big thank you to our man, Dave Hamilton.
Absolutely.
Dave Hamilton with Backbeat Media, at Backbeat Media, who has helped us all along the way put this thing together.
Absolutely. Bandwidth is provided by CashFly. And if you have heard any terms today that we have glossed over, shoot us an email at repeat@soderawas.us, fig@soderawas.us, or sticks@soderawas.us, and ask us about that term and ask us to get in the glossary, which is soderawas.us/glossary. What if you want to wear some cool shirts or hats?
Well, at our merch store, soderawas.us/merch. Just saying.
Yeah.
I'm not wearing any at the moment. I'm traveling in my aluminum tube. But, you know, Repeat's rocking the merch, and Bago's rocking the merch in the background there.
Yeah. So T-shirts, polo shirts, Whiskey glasses, playing cards, a clock, beach towels, blankets, you name it. We got all kinds of merch there.
Whoa, hold on. It's slow down. It's bikini season. We have a bikini, and it looks really nice. I mean, I think it looks really nice. You don't want to see it on me, although I do think I look pretty nice in it.
Of course there's that.
I can rock it.
Yeah. And then there's a couple folks that we've mentioned up to now. We've got Bago in the background producing today. Sticks for his help producing. He's done several shorts on our YouTube channel, so we appreciate that as well. One thing I will mention, we do extra stories now. So for extra content, go to sotherewas.us/Patreon or /donate to donate directly. That will get you access to the extra content as our way of saying thank you for helping keep our tanks fuel and our engines running. And so thank you to Styx and Bago so much for helping us put this show together. A couple more people we should probably thank. Fig, can you think of any? Fig is frozen. Well, I can think of them. It's the people playing that fine music in the background. It is the Dos Gringos who allow us to use their music. And then there's Brad Silkott at BDSAviationPhotography.com who lets us use some of his fantastic imagery. So everybody, until next week, for Fig, this is Repeat saying stay safe and check six.
There I was, crossing the pond, and you could see that I wasn't exactly fond of all the shit I was wearing on that day. Now an F-16 is cramped enough, but it's even worse with all that stuff supposed to save your life. But we knew there was no way. 'Cause when you're going down the North Atlantic, man, it's over.
You heard it. He said it's over.
Piece of cake. Mmm, cake.